Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I am your host, Mike Jokum. Frenchie is here. We are back from the Thanksgiving break. Thank you to our friends at Java House for continuing their support. If you are not in the Indianapolis area, please go to javahouse.com and use promo code PITLANE10 for 10% off your orders. I promise I will actually record an episode from there at one point. I have literally gotten sick both times I was supposed to go, despite confirming with them I was going to go. So I will at some point make it there. Not this week, not next week, probably not the week after either. Maybe in the new year. But I'm trying. So, Frenchie, listeners, there's not a ton going on, so we figured we'd switch it up a little bit. There's a little bit of news. I think today we're actually not going to talk about IndyCar. We're going to talk about nothing but e-scooter and Iowa ticket prices. That's the only things we're going to talk about for an hour, maybe 4 hours. Who knows? I've got plenty of time right now, so you know we could do whatever we want. In all seriousness, we're going to do a couple trivia questions, kind of rapid fire back and forth. So instead of stump Frenchie, it's stump each other. Then we'll touch on a little bit of news. And yeah, I'm going to start because I want to. This one has more than, well, has multiple correct answers. So I want to see how many you can get. Can you name at least five people who won the Indy 500 from 1990 to 2000?
Oh, yeah, I think I can do that. So 90 was Ari Leyendyke, 91 was Rick Mears, 92 was Allanser Jr., 93 was Emerson Fittipaldi, 94 was Allanser Jr., and 95 was Jacques Villeneuve.
Yeah, right? Can you go through the rest of the 90s while you're just like...
Then the split happened, and I was a cart person. So let me think about who won. Buddy Lazier, is he 96? 97. I honestly don't know. I know 98, I think, is Kenny Brack.
99 is Kenny Brack.
Or is he 99? Okay, 99. So yeah, 97 and 98, I know them.
You missed. Can't remember. Leyendyke in 97, Eddie Cheever in 98.
Oh, yeah, you won it again. Who did I miss?
Eddie Cheever.
In 98? Oh, yeah. It's like one of the most bland, favorite winners right there.
All right, you're up.
Okay, so this is also Indy 500 related. Which Indy 500 has had the most lead changes?
Ooh.
And I'll give you want to know how many lead changes?
No, that won't make a difference. Okay. Is it from 2010 to now?
Okay. Yes.
2014?
Ooh, so close. 2013.
So that was TK's win? Okay.
Yep,
okay.
You got that. It was 68 lead changes.
Damn. I thought it was the one Hunter Ray won in 14, but good question. All right. We're going to keep with the Indy 500 winners here because I didn't have a ton of time to prepare questions for, well, Frenchie knows why. So let's skip down here. Let's go 2000 to 2010. Same exact question.
Okay, that should be easier because Montoya won it in 2000. Yep. Then Castro Neves won it in 2001 and then 2002 technically because Paul Tracy really won that. 2003 was Gilles LeFerrin, my guy back then. 2004 was Buddy Rice. And then 2005 was a Weldon win, right? Yep. His first win. And then we get into the period where, like, Dario won a bunch of them.
Nope.
So, Sam Morris Jr. won 2006.
Yeah, how could you miss
and
that?
And then Dario starts winning a bunch of them.
Yeah. All right. Good enough there. All right, you're up.
Okay, so I think this is the only one that I have that's still an Indy 500 question. So, which was the shortest Indy 500 race in terms of laps? And I can give you the number of laps if you want. It was shortened by rain, I believe.
Was it in the 70s?
Yeah.
I'm not going to...
There were multiple shortened by rain.
Yeah, I'm not going to get it. I'm not going to get this. Let's just go 74.
I mean, not that far. It was 76. So it was Johnny Rutherford's second win, I guess it was. It was only 102.
I knew it was like, I was going to say 110, but yeah. Oh, well. All right, my turn. So we are going to go to the 90s. Now, this one might be tough for you because we were just talking about CART and whatnot, but the first 2 years of CART, a.k.a. the early 90s, what was that? I forget what years it was exactly now because I didn't write it down. There were two chassis being used. Who were the manufacturers?
Wait, for CART or for... Do you mean for IRL? CART. Oh, for CART in the 90s? You had a Lola chassis. One, yep. And there was a... Was it... March was before that, so I don't know if it was March. That was old. That was like 80s. So what was the other? I mean, Penske, I guess, started to have a chassis eventually. Yeah. Oh, Raynard? Okay, so that one was pretty good. I had to think about that one. Let's see. Okay, so in the vein of the 2000s that we were just on. Oh, no, well, I don't want to give you that away. But maybe, it won't help you that much. Okay, so the last time that second place in the IndyCar Championship had more wins than the champion was which year? Like, we obviously just had that in this past season, but what was the last time it happened?
It's more recent, you said, or recent-ish?
Yeah. Because that's the last time. I'm sure there's a bunch of times before that.
Was it one when Dixon won his last, not his, his 2015 championship?
No, I don't think so. Because they had the same number of wins, I believe. Right? Didn't he won on countback or something?
That was the one where he ended up tied with Montoya. I mean,
yeah, so he won on countback, right?
Yeah, I don't remember how many wins they had.
So he had more wins than, actually, if he won on countback.
Darn. Okay. Yeah, I got nothing.
It was 2011 from my research. And funnily enough, Dario was the champion. He had 4 wins, and Will Power had 6 wins.
Okay, yep.
Was unable to nab that championship.
All right.
So he got his redemption.
I have another chassis one for you. This one might be tough. The initial chassis was called the Mark V or Mark V from 1997 to 2000, was produced by what manufacturer? Eventually, they do get purchased by Renard.
Who is building the chassis? Oh, man. This is IRL. Hold on. I can see the car because the Oldsmobile engines, it's like something Force.
Not G-Force.
Oh,
G-Force. G-Force was it G-Force IRL? Yeah, G-Force was IRL.
Wait, you're asking for a car?
No, this is an IndyCar chassis. It would be 97 to 2000.
Oh, was it a?
It was not. It was a Riley and Scott.
Oh. Okay, well, they made sports
Riley
cars.
And Scott was purchased by Renard, and an all-new Mark 7 was introduced for the 2000 season. It won in Phoenix, the second race of the year, by our friend Buddy Lazier, but was super off the pace at Indy and was dropped by the teams afterwards.
Wasn't the Riley and Scott Mark 3 a car that won, like, the Daytona 24 in the late 90s? I think it was. I think it's, like, the one that Wayne Taylor won in, but I may be off. Okay, so this one has... Well, I have a backup answer for this one, basically. there's a correct answer, but if you can get either one of these, I'll count as you nailing it. So the best average starting position across a season. It's going to blow your mind.
Like it's somebody I wouldn't expect it to be?
No, you might expect it, but just like how good the average qualifying.
I'm going to say 1.7.
Oh, my God. That's so close.
What was it?
So it's 2004, Sebastian Bourdais, his average starting position was 1.6. And then the next closest one that I has the second answer, so I count you as getting this right. was Mears in 1982 with 1.7. Can you imagine across a whole season?
Yeah, I feel like I don't think I've gotten any of these right, but I've been off by like 0.1 or like 1 year on every single one. So I'm taking that as a win right now. All right, I have one yeah. more. I don't know where I wrote it down. Oh boy, it's not in my notepad. So we're just gonna go to my research I was looking at here, and go with. I don't know. What should we go with? Hold on. We're going to keep scrolling. I have a bunch of notes written down here. And
oh, wow.
I mean, some of them are, I just like copied and pasted a bunch of things. But all right, let's go with an easy one here. Maybe not easy, but what year was Andretti Autosport first founded?
Ooh, that's interesting because when did he leave Team Green? Are you talking about like Andretti Green counts as when they're founded?
I believe, based on what I have written down in front of me, I would believe that, yes, that counts.
Okay. Then it's like, man, was it 05?
You're 93.
That counts as when Andretti Autosport.
That's what my notes
found?
Say. I mean, that's what the research I found said.
What? He was still driving for Newman Haas. Or no, in 93 he started in F1, but then he came back to Ganassi, and then he went to Newman Haas. So
let's see.
Where was Andretti Autosport?
Let's see. 93.
Oh, maybe. Okay, are we counting Team Green started
Probably.
Back then? And that's like the origins of Andretti?
Forsyth Green Racing, yes. That's what they're calling it in 93.
Yeah.
I had to switch. For everybody listening, I had to switch screens to where I grabbed my notes from on the...
So when did it become just Andretti?
It became Autosport. Andretti in... Are you talking Andretti Green or Andretti Autosport?
You asked me when Andretti okay. Autosport was.
Andretti back. Autosport would be 09.
Oh, so I was still off. Okay, I said 05.
Okay.
They were still Andretti Green then? Wow, okay.
It lasted longer than people remember for some reason. I don't know why. I don't remember it lasting that long either, but...
I wonder what Kim Green's doing these days. No, he's part of Green Savory. We know what he's doing. Never mind.
I always forget about that.
All right, so this one is another one with multiple answers. If you get any of them, you're correct. So there are a few tracks that we're going to get into the news, obviously, but that we're talking about going back to, or returning to. It's in everybody's dreams, I guess. So I want you to give me the driver who has the most all-time wins at each of these tracks, if you can. There's three of them that I wrote down.
Okay.
Okay, so first one, should be easy for you, is Nazareth, who has the most all-time wins there.
I honestly don't. I don't know Nazareth history very well because it's been a long time since I've looked at it.
Okay.
You're probably... I probably was. It wasn't an Andretti, was it? Okay.
No, yeah, believe it or not, it wasn't.
Rick Mears.
No, you would think, but it was Emerson Fittipaldi.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He won three times there. It's not like super dominant, but three times.
Okay.
Okay, Milwaukee. If we're talking about going back there. It's maybe not who you think it is. This was someone that surprised
Bourdais?
Me a little bit. No, I don't know how many wins he has there. I didn't see that.
I think he only has that one that was dominating.
I think he's the one who won the most times at Surfers Paradise, if I wrote that correctly.
I got nothing.
This goes back a little bit further.
Cristiano D'Amato.
No, further than that. Did he?
I don't know.
I don't even know. It's Roger Ward.
Oh, wow.
He won seven times at Milwaukee. Yeah. Like, we're talking 50-60.
I never would have guessed that.
I was going to ask you about Trenton, but I feel like you'd know that. So the last one that I want to ask you about is Atlanta Speedway, when IndyCar used to go there.
I don't know.
This is probably more obvious.
Can you give me a decade?
You know, it's an oval. It's the 70s, 80s. Yeah.
Mario.
No, it's Rick Mears. He won there five times.
Okay. Well, that question was a struggle for me, but it's fine. All right. We're going to do the news and... Yeah, what do we got up first?
I think the thing to start with is, let's go in chronological order, maybe, if I can remember when all these things took place, because Thanksgiving was kind of a haze of little nuggets of IndyCar news coming out. Yeah. But I guess the first one is that we've got official announcement that Stefan Wilson and Cusick Motorsports are going to partner with Dreyer and Reinbold for the Indy 500 next.
Okay, that's cool. I'm trying to pretend like I didn't know that. That's why I reacted that way. Yeah, I'm super pumped for...
Why pretend that you didn't?
It's like, oh my God,
everyone probably knows. We're just recapping.
Yeah, I think it's super cool for Stefan and for Cusick to be partnered with Dreyer and Reinbold. I think Dreyer and Reinbold like actually seemed to really turn a corner last year in their 500 efforts and put on a strong showing. So I think that'll help Stefan and whoever Stefan's teammate may be for the 500 next year.
Or may not be
for the 500 next year.
We don't know.
I can tell you one thing. It won't be me. And... Well, not yet. I'm still trying to raise the funding, but we will see.
Apparently so is Sage Karam. Unfortunately, yeah, he is no longer a part of that team.
That's a bummer. Let me say one thing on Stefan. I'm super pumped for him. The people who are like, oh, he's just getting this because he is Justin Wilson's brother, don't realize that Stefan is a very talented racer that just, you know, things haven't gone his way for, you know, whatever reason, whether it's luck or mistakes or whatnot, but the guy's talented. I know he's like 9 feet tall, so it's hard to fit in an Indy car, but he's very talented. So, yeah. And the Sage Karam thing, and then I'll let you, give your thoughts. It's unfortunate because Sage had a good car last year, obviously, like I just said, and was really good. And I think he is a completely different driver and person than he was when he had his first Indy 500. 7 or 8 years ago, probably at this point. I don't even remember when it was. Whatever year Kurt Busch was in the Indy 500, I think that was...
Was that like 14?
15?
12? Okay, maybe it was 2014.
It was a while ago.
Yeah.
He was, he's a different guy now. He's matured a lot.
Look, for sure.
I hope he gets a chance. It seems like he's kind of just like given up hope and kind of resigned to doing Xfinity. And if that makes him happy, cool. I think he could be a really talented driver. He had a couple good Xfinity races last year from the kind of end of the season that I saw. So that'd be cool, but also it'd be a bummer to I would like Sage to at least be able to, like Connor did a couple years ago, at least lead like a good chunk of laps.
So here's another piece of trivia that actually just presented itself. This is going to be Stefan Wilson's fifth Indy 500. That's kind of hard to believe that it's only going to be his fifth. But he has done he's done a total of 5 races, right? So he's done 4 Indy 500s previously. What is that fifth race that wasn't an Indy 500 that he's participated in? He did one other like random IndyCar race for
Baltimore?
Dale Coyne. How did you know that?
I don't know why I know that, but I'm pretty sure. Like on Twitter a couple of years ago, he gave away like a signed Baltimore visor or something like that from his helmet. And I don't know. That's the only thing. No.
Did you win that?
I don't win things on Twitter. that used to be you.
Yeah. Baltimore 2013. I know. It was a nice period, but I don't really enter those things anymore. I have to pass my luck along to somebody else. Next little piece of news I think that we should discuss is this was a little weird. They released this, I think, on Wednesday, right before Thanksgiving at 3:30, 4 p.m., the Ray Hall news. Yeah, you knew what I was going to say. Exactly. Yeah, so essentially what is happening, I guess maybe because it's kind of embarrassing for some of the parties involved, it looks like, Hy-Vee's still on the car, but it's being switched, right? So now Jack Harvey is going to be in the 30, with primary sponsorship still to be announced. And then Christian Lundgaard is moving over to the 45, which is the Hy-Vee car. And I don't know if this is a, we got to please Hy-Vee. We got to make sure that, if Jack has another bad season, which I don't think he will, hopefully, we can't have him in that car because then maybe Hy-Vee will run away. So maybe that's just the team kind of preempting it. But it's just kind of a little interesting.
Running should be simple. Just put on your shoes and go. And yet, when you try to learn about how to get better at it, especially as you age, you're confronted with conflicting advice, complicated workouts, and confusing nutrition trends that just won't work for you. On The Planted Runner, I'll share exactly how to run faster, longer, and feel great doing it at any age because you don't have time to waste. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, and I went from not running at all in my late 30s to finishing a marathon in 2:58 at age 42, all on a plant-based diet. I've helped hundreds of runners achieve new personal records well into their 60s and even 70s with science-backed training, plant-based nutrition, and proven mental strength techniques. Each episode of The Planted Runner is like a private coaching session on the run where you'll learn from me and the guests I interview. You'll get actionable lessons to help you become a better runner every week and reach goals you never thought possible. Whether you're training for your first 5K or your 50th marathon, take along The Planted Runner on your next run. Let me show you how your best running is still ahead of you.
Get ready, race fans, because the ultimate NASCAR experience is about to hit the airwaves. Welcome to Pit Pass NASCAR, the podcast that takes you deep into the heart-pounding world of NASCAR racing.
Join us each week as we bring you closer to the NASCAR action with exclusive interviews and all the news and rumors you need with your favorite drivers, team members, and industry insiders.
So whether you're a fan of super speedways, short ovals, or road racing, or you've just watched Talladega Nights, Pit Pass NASCAR is the podcast you've been waiting for.
Get ready to fuel your passion for NASCAR like never before. Subscribe now to Pit Pass NASCAR on your favorite podcast platform or head to evergreenpodcast.com and get ready to join us.
Launching in the fall on Evergreen Podcast Network. Follow us on social media at pitpass_NASCAR to stay up to date with everything you need to know about the podcast.
And then they put, you know, that Graham Rahal is going to stay in the 15, like anybody was questioning that.
Yeah, I don't know why we had to put that one in there, but nonetheless, it's like slightly disappointing. Listen, I get it. I totally get it. But it's also slightly disappointing because Jack has been one of the five or six drivers that has always given us, you know, a good interview and the time of the day, even when I was just first starting out with this thing 5 years and 2 days ago. So, yeah, I mean, it's a little bummer, but I mean, Christian deserves it. Yeah, he had a good rookie year and with those four wheels on his car. So, you know, there's not much to say, but good for him. Hopefully, the team in general can start out strong this year.
So this was the other thing I found interesting. I guess we heard this announcement a little bit. Like, they said something about it a few months ago, maybe in September. But now he's officially an employee. It's Stefano Sordo. He's going to be the technical director there at Rahal Letterman Lanigan now. But I looked him up on LinkedIn, and his resume is impressive. Yeah, and you can go really far back, but the first thing I think that's kind of relevant is he started in 2000 as a race engineer for Arrows in F1. Then he went to Jaguar. Then he was with Red Bull for a while in Toro Rosso. Then he was like the head of Aero at Red Bull for 9 years before he moved from his last job where he was the director of vehicle performance for the McLaren F1 program. So that's a big catch for Rahal.
Wow. All right. I mean, I knew he had a good resume. I didn't realize it was that good, so...
Yeah.
Props.
They're not
props,
playing.
All right. All right. What's next?
Let's see. I guess Jay Fry, I don't even know if this is really news or not. We can decide. But Jay Fry apparently said that 20 races during the season would be the goal and that would be the sweet spot, as he says. But he obviously, you know, you have to add three, and IndyCar's not just going to foot the bill on all of those.
Yeah.
So what are they going to be? Do we ever see 20? I mean, I don't know if that's just him kind of saying that. I always thought Roger Penske said he liked 17 or 18 as a number.
I don't remember what Roger said. It sounds like you're vaguely right. I just don't remember. But, I mean, yeah, it's cool. But am I, you know, getting my hopes up that, you know, in 2024, there's going to be 20 races? No. If we add one, I think that would be... you know, if we go to 18 at that point, sure. Maybe we get to 19 or 20 in 4 or 5 years from now, depending on how things in the world and things in IndyCar are going. Cool. But I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
No, unless they just start throwing in random doubleheaders, which I don't know if we need more of those.
No, please, no. One a year is enough for me.
Or just add more races at the Indy road course.
No.
Just to make it 20 rounds.
No. That's all I have. No. Just no.
Hey, I don't know. I mean, where could you see them going? Because they're talking about international stuff. This was kind of off the back of that, what are they called? Demonstration run in Argentina.
I think Argentina is a good possibility. Argentina and Mexico seem like strong possibilities. I don't want to say strong like it's going to happen next year or something like that. Strong like it could become a rumor. Like I'm not confident enough beyond saying it's a possibility that they might talk about it one day. And maybe they already are.
Yeah.
But and maybe this Argentina thing has spurred on more conversations that we just haven't heard about yet. It's highly possible. But other than those two, maybe I don't know. I have a hard time seeing them going over to like Europe or anything like that because of the money involved.
Yeah.
So do you go to another, like, do you do a Western Canada race? Do you do, I don't know. Do you add,
why not?
You know, Milwaukee or, you know, the soon to be rebuilt Fontana or obviously I'm kidding on that one, but
yeah,
I don't know. Something else that you Watkins Glen or something like that.
Coda,
you know, there's definitely possibilities that you could do there, but yeah, that's all I got.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. I think you're right about Mexico. I don't know if Argentina is going to be a goal of anybody but Ricardo Juncos, unless he can really start to bring in some large businesses or sponsors, partners from Argentina that would become relevant for the other teams. I think Mexico is probably relevant for a lot of the brands that are already in IndyCar. They probably have markets in Canada and Mexico just as North America, but I doubt many of them reach down into Argentina. So we'll have to see. People seem excited there. I mean, that's a good first step.
So I think that, like, if you can get that crowd for a demonstration run, you can get that crowd for a race weekend. And then, so.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I think we've just got a couple more pieces of news. Did we talk about Josh Pearson on the last time we recorded? Okay, so that's news that we need to just get at. Ed Carpenter Racing now has a development driver in 16-ish, 17-year-old Josh Pearson.
He's 10. He's a super nice kid. I did interview him when I did that Indy Lights bullpen a month or so ago. Super nice kid. He just makes me feel really old, like really old.
Yeah, let's see, because our co-host makes us feel pretty old, too, but how old is, like, what year was Pearson born in?
2008?
Gotta find out. I start to look at,
I'll look it up right now.
Oh, okay. I start to look at now, like, NFL players, and I feel old, because they're younger than me now, like NFL quarterbacks at this point. He was born in 2006, you weren't that far off.
So,
he was born on Valentine's Day. How romantic.
So, you know, you're saying, like, NFL players. So there's a guy who plays for the Colts here in Indianapolis, Zaire Franklin, who went to the same high school as me back in Philly. Super cool. He's a really nice guy. He seems pretty talented. I don't know football talent that well, but so I went to the Colts game on Monday with a friend, and I was sitting there talking to him, and I'm like, yeah, you know, Zaire Franklin went to my high school. He's like, oh, are you guys the same age? And I was like, Nope, I don't honestly know how old he is, but he's got to be at least 8 years younger than me.
We got to find out.
Are you looking it up?
Yeah, I want to see. Okay, let's see. He was born. Oh, he's even 3 years younger than me.
Damn.
So that means, yeah, everybody can do the math if they know how old Host is, but yeah.
All right, continue on.
All right, last couple pieces of news, I guess. We've got news that IndyCar will have a new attenuator next season. And
I think we're only probably talking about that because it's a really slow time of the year off season. But hey, I guess this is supposed to, you know, improve safety. It's a redesigned unit that's, I guess, improves crushability. It's what it says in what I'm reading, and reduce the forces transmitted into the cockpit from rearward impacts.
I mean, it makes
so like a Joseph Newgarden crash at Iowa.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's cool. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but yeah, the diagram. I did actually read that yesterday or the day before, whenever it came out. But it's cool, and I appreciate the fact that this is something that can go towards the new car chassis whenever that actually comes out, or new engine, or you know, however, so they have some time to see how things start to work together. It's something that probably 98% of the fans won't care about, but it's probably more important than we realize, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it's not as obvious, I think, as something like a aero screen, but I mean, it just makes a difference, especially when we're talking about development being done on a car that first came out in 2012.
Yeah, don't say that too loud, because people are going to go, it came out 10 years ago.
Yeah, I guess that's now a nice, easy round number for them to criticize IndyCar.
There's one other thing we have.
The racing's still good.
Sorry, I keep cutting you off tonight.
No, you're good.
There's one other thing we have not talked about. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was leaving the best for last.
Okay. I'll leave it to you then.
I'm sure everyone knows, because it was the big topic of discussion on social media, but IndyCar's big Hy-Vee race weekend doubleheader is going to feature four pretty massive music artists. And who do we have? We have Carrie Underwood.
Love her.
Zach Brown.
Don't know him very well.
Zach Brown Band, I guess. Kenny Chesney. And then Ed Sheeran.
It's pretty massive.
Yeah, I mean, not my music taste, really, but you got to respect that they kind of nabbed these artists. And I know that people are really frustrated about the prices going up if they just want to see the race, or they expect somehow to nab these. I mean, I'm looking, these guys are with Grammy Award winners that have multiple number one hits. These are like worldwide household names. I mean, even if you don't like country music, you know who these people are. And Ed Sheeran, who I guess doesn't sing country music. I don't know what genre he really
pop
is.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not really big into Ed Sheeran.
Rock? He's not really rock,
no,
I wouldn't say. But
no.
I don't know.
Yeah. I know you have a bunch of thoughts, so I'm going to keep mine short. It's a tough... We all want IndyCar to be more popular, and one of the things to make IndyCar more popular is things like this, things like Iowa last year, other tracks that, you know, do some sort of fun and games type of stuff. Like Gateway always does a good job, and Detroit a couple of years ago pre-COVID did a really good job on Belle Isle, and maybe they did this year. Obviously, I took that weekend off for my birthday this year, but you know, they're trying to give it a more festival like atmosphere, like you get at some street courses and whatnot. So I get it. I know it's a lot. It's not going to be for everybody, and that's fine. But this is, I also am interested to see how many people will come, you know, maybe that don't know a lot about IndyCar. And you know, a lot of comments I see, especially on Facebook, are, well, isn't it going to be embarrassing if the stands are 3/4 empty? How many, you might get a chunk of people who just, you know, sit down in the stands for the concert, pre-concert, and then, you know, they're going to come before the post-race concert, so you'll get that trickle-in effect of people that come either before the first race. So you're going to get people that are going to be there all day, whether they're there for the race or not. So I don't think that 3/4 stands empty thing is really a big deal. Now, could I be wrong? Yes, it's Iowa. It could be 8,000 degrees in the summer there, like it was last year. It was miserable. But I'm honestly willing to give this one a chance right now. And if you're there for just the concerts and you don't care about IndyCar, thank you for spending your money at these concerts. That can only help IndyCar in the long run. Now, if this is a total failure, it was a good attempt by Hy-Vee. They can scale it back. You know, I'm honestly open-minded. I'm willing to give it a shot. I know we might be in the minority there, And I understand why people are frustrated. It's hard to buy four tickets for a family when you maybe you don't care about the concerts or whatever. And if you don't care about the concerts, please stop telling me you don't care about the concerts, because I don't care either.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head there. This may attract some people, because to get a ticket to see probably any one of those four artists by themselves is less than the ticket's going to be for, you know, a race ticket. So that's a massive deal, and I could see people coming just for the concerts alone. And if they spend the money at the track, maybe it doesn't matter if the stands are full, if they make their revenue, you know? So I think this could be a win for IndyCar, even though it may seem like a betrayal of some kind for the fans who feel like they're getting passed over or gypped, because it's, you know, for them technically that they're going to this event. But I think to make it a success with the amount of money that Hy-Vee is spending, they need to take a big risk like this, and you can't blame them for doing it. This is what growth honestly looks like. And I know people are always talking about, we want IndyCar to grow. But if we then crap all over the growth when it happens and act like, oh, they're taking away our little niche favorite, you know, thing that we're, you know, club members of, that we feel like we belong to. I mean, that's what's going to happen, right? Before F1 was popular in the U.S., it felt kind of cool, like niche, you know, you're an F1 fan, you meet somebody that's a little bit more special to talk about F1 then. But the growth is kind of awesome, too, because it just built, you know, makes racing more popular globally.
Yeah, it's okay if you can't afford to go and whatnot. Like,
listen,
you got to prioritize bills or family or alcohol or whatever your thing is. But at the same time, I think it can help IndyCar, and I could be wrong. It's not the first time I would be wrong.
Yeah,
that's okay, and that's okay. If we're wrong, I'll do a whole episode next year on November 30th about how I was wrong last year. And I'm only saying that because I guarantee you I'll forget. So, yeah, I'm curious to see how it'll be. I'm very intrigued by the concerts. I'm hoping I can convince Sam to sit in the car with me for 7 hours and drive west to Iowa, the middle of Iowa in the summer, because I know she likes Kenny Chesney. I know she likes Zach Brown Band, I think, maybe to a lesser degree. And the other, Carrie Underwood and Ed Sheeran, not really sure of. I don't really remember. I know we talked about it, but anyway, we'll wrap it up there. Everybody, thank you very much for listening. Next week, we're going to have kind of a weird week, because I will unfortunately not be recording, because I have some medical stuff to take care of. So Frenchie will be doing IndyCar with a special guest co-host and F1 with a different special guest co-host, both of whom will not be friend of the show, Cody Bray. I can promise you that. So, I will see Cody this weekend, though. So, anyway, everybody have a lovely weekend of whatever you want to do.
Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They're able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcasts.